Hello, it's Robert Bathurst here. I was one of the first guests on My Time Capsule, and Mike has asked me to tell you that you can now listen to the podcast ad-free by subscribing to Acast Plus. Details of how to join are in the description of each episode. Mike says it's very reasonably priced. In fact, Mike says it's a bargain. And who am I to disagree, locked here in his cellar? Anyway, for a small subscription, Acast Plus, My Time Capsule, ad-free. Free. Unlike me.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of My Time Capsule. I'm Mike Fenton-Stevens, and if you're new to this podcast, it's fairly straightforward, yet strangely unpredictable. I ask my guests to reveal the five things from their life that they would like to keep safe in a time capsule, four things they cherish and one thing they loathe and would like to bury in the ground and never have to think about again. They can choose anything personal to them, a person, a place, an object, even a smell, and then we talk about why these things are significant to them. Doing that in this episode is the actress Aurora Burkhart, a rising star, if not already a risen star, of American and British television. Her career has only just started. I mean, let's face it, she only graduated from the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art, or RADA, in 2018. And already she's made a massive splash, playing Viv Allen in the Netflix smash hit October Faction and Jenna in The Stranger, alongside Siobhan Finneran, Richard Armitage, Anthony Head, Jennifer Saunders, Paul Kay, and Dervla Kerwin. She's also appeared in the comedy drama Sex Education. Aurora is going places. In fact, she'd gone to a place when we talked to each other over the internet. Me from my home in Tunbridge Wells, yes, I know, I get about, and Aurora from her hotel room, somewhere in the Far East. No, I don't mean Southend. I hope you enjoy it.
How are you doing?
I'm really good. How lovely to meet you.
You too.
How lovely of you to do this for me. It's really sweet of you.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Have you been busy?
You know what? Weirdly, the last fortnight, I've been incredibly busy, which I think is just one of those weird things where I've left the country and then, of course, things pick up. I'm just like, okay. So I haven't actually had time to properly relax. And I've been so jet lagged.
Are you? Have you just come back?
No, I'm still there. I'm literally now on day, 14 or something of being in Vietnam.
How fantastic. Mm. Exciting.
It is exciting.
So anyway, yes. We're going to play this game that you're going to think of five things from your life. And we're going to put them in a time capsule.
Yeah.
Four things that you love and one thing that you're glad to get rid of. Well, we'll see what happens. Okay, so what's your first thing?
My first thing would not have been first on my list if it wasn't for the fact that we went through lockdown and I discovered things that really mean a lot to me.
Yeah.
And the first thing is a lifetime supply of my favourite wine.
Okay.
Because that's what helped me through lockdown. And I've realised that now. And what was the saddest thing was realising that we only had two bottles. And it's quite hard to get hold of.
No. What is it?
So it's called Montpezat. It's a really convoluted story, which is basically that a friend of mine convinced me to go on a wine holiday.
Did that take much convincing?
No. He said, do you want to go on a wine? And I said, yes. And then he said, holiday. And yes. I said, great. That's what I thought you were going to say. So he convinced me. He lives in Barcelona. And just before I embark on this, this holiday made such a huge impression of me. And he reminded me recently that we were only there for 2 days. So it had a profound impact on me. Anyway, I fly to Barcelona. We drive up to this place in South France called Pézenas, which is this tiny village that hasn't changed at all.
No.
You know, it's had a population of 7,000 for the last 200 years or something. But it's really, it almost feels like if you took South London and placed the people into this place, that's what it feels like. So it felt incredibly familiar, but it was this really unfamiliar setting, really old kind of buildings and things that you kind of expect to read in, you know, 19th century French novels. Mm. And it's the wine region that's not as expensive or trendy as the bit that most people think of when they go, you know, or say South of France. But it's really, really good. I mean, we, in our Airbnb, the people who owned it happened to also own a chateau, so they left us some wine. But we just at random asked to go and have a tasting. Of course, if you're like in that region, tastings aren't a big deal. So they're like, yeah, of course, come.
Yeah.
We went to this place called Montpezat, and the guy, we said, we did our little degustation. And he was like, you know, talking us through all these wines, he said, thank you very much. And how much was the tasting? He was like, what do you mean, how much? It's free, of course. It's just me letting you taste the wine. And we were like, what? Yeah. Anyway, it was really good wine. I can't describe it. It's red and it's all organic. Mm. And this guy harvests it, Christoph, by himself with some sheep. And he attaches little bells to the sheep over summer. And he showed us all these videos. And he has this gorgeous little dog. And it's just, it was so lovely. But the wine was incredible. And there was one in particular. And he said, you know, leave it out for an hour. And also, I'd recommend you kind of save it till autumn next year. You know, he just had all these crazy tips. Anyway, it was really good wine, and therefore we've remembered it, like my friend Alex and I remembered it as a ridiculously amazing holiday. Also because the town's quite small, and so there's a lot of gossip. So we said where we were staying, he was like, oh, he knew the people who owned it. I can't remember their surname, but you know, when we said it, he was like, oh, Les François. And he was just like, I can't believe you're staying with them. And there was a lot of competition and petty gossip and strange people and people stopping us in the street being like, I saw you having your aperitif. I was in a window. You were, you know, this pub. And we're like, oh my gosh, what's going on? So it was really good. But the best thing about it was the wine. And I bought an extra suitcase at the airport so I could take back wine.
Very wise. Well done.
And you can't get it anywhere else. And
I think they keep the best stuff for themselves. They really do. The stuff that's made in little vineyards,
yeah,
they just keep it for themselves. And you only get to taste it if you go there.
Well, this is the thing. And so I don't know if you... This is another thing I discovered during lockdown, is there's an app called Wine App, and you can order wine and it's delivered to your house in 30 minutes. I mean, it's ridiculous. I don't know how they do it. And, you know, they had a little survey. Do you want anything that you would like to recommend for us to do, or any wines? And I was like, there is a chateau in Pézenas. And I wrote this really long description. So I'm desperate and hoping that they start sourcing this wine, because I said to Christoph, do you ever sell it to the UK? No, but I'd ship it to you if you ask. I mean, great. But I've never asked, because it is kind of ridiculous and feels really extravagant, because it wasn't expensive when you were there because you were in the region.
Yeah.
But I think shipping over would cost a lot of money. Anyway, I would like that in my podcast.
I've been to Pézenas. It is beautiful, isn't it?
Oh my gosh, it's just incredible. And we wanted to go back this year, and then obviously everything happened and shut down. So we haven't been able to go, but we're just completely obsessed. And it's still something we talk about all the time. And the person I met, my friend Alex, I mean, we've lived abroad together and we've traveled around a lot together. And there's nowhere we talk about more than this 2-day trip to Pézenas. Just really odd obsession that we have. Obviously, it was just an amazing time. But it has that little road, doesn't it, of all the little shops,
yeah,
you know, and it winds round. And it's got all those curio shops. And my friend bought this crazy jacket, this pink jacket, that he said was going to define him in Barcelona. And I don't know what we did. I don't know how he wanted to cram so much into 48 hours. But yeah, okay, that's number one.
Can you get it in Vietnam?
No. I mean, the wine I've had here so far has not been great. I've been bought a Cabernet Sauvignon. I'm not that into wine, by the way, so I'm really into it. But anyway, I was bought a Cabernet Sauvignon, and I said, well, actually, could I get a Malbec? And if not a Malbec, a Merlot. And I got a Merlot, and the consistency wasn't good.
Mm.
And it was too translucent, and therefore it was vinegary, and even leaving it out hasn't improved it. So I've been
moving on. You do know your wine. You've had experience.
You know what it is? I lived in France for a bit. I think that just like...
Well, you've got to know it then.
Yeah.
A long time ago, there was a place in Brighton that they'd managed to buy all the wine from the wine cellars of the Kremlin.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, I know. The problem was that it had been down in the cellars for a while and all the labels had come off. So they had no idea what it was. So they were selling it off for £10 a bottle. And I bought a dozen bottles just on the off chance. Let's see. You never know. And some of it was disgusting.
Yeah, Russian wine.
About half the bottles were unbelievable. I mean, they really? Were clearly incredibly old and fantastic wine, but you had no idea what they were.
No offence, but the good ones probably weren't Russian. They might have been from the south. I lived in Russia as well for a bit because I did French and Russian at university. And some of the wine there, just so bad. So bad that it's painful to remember. I think also they have this version of a Cava or a Sampan. Yeah. Some of it was really nice and some of it just tasted like Lambrini. And you couldn't always tell when you're picking up a bottle which way it's going to go. Some of the wine was nice, and actually there was a nice restaurant. I can't remember what it's called, Gulka or something. We used to go for, you know, I mean, we were... I'm not coming off well for alcohol here. We used to go sometimes at lunchtime between our classes and get a glass of wine with lunch. It was stressful living in Russia, so.
You've crammed some stuff in. Aurora, how old are you?
I'm 28.
You've crammed it in already, haven't you?
I've tried.
Yeah, you've succeeded. It's brilliant. All right, we will take that beautiful wine from Pezenac and we will put it into the time capsule for you. A lifetime supply.
A lifetime supply, yeah.
So you're planning to go and live in this time capsule then?
Yes, forever.
Anytime you want, you're going to take the top off and get a bottle out.
Yes, yeah. I may need to escape the world on occasion, so I'm just thinking I do need a lifetime supply.
All right. It's sitting there at the correct temperature.
Perfect.
So what's your next item?
My next item, I think I'd like to take some seeds to just grow things.
So flowers or vegetable seeds?
A bit of both.
Right.
A combination. I really love plants. And I find them very healing and very lovely to be around. And also, I mean, on occasion I become a really bad plant mother and then they wilt, and somehow they always come back to life, and I find it so encouraging.
You can treat them with complete disregard, and yet
and they come back. Yeah, I really, really, really love plants so very much, and I find it very hard to be in a place without them. And even if I have to live somewhere for a short time, I like to buy some to be there with me.
Oh.
Because I always think of them as company. I mean, I really am weird with plants. I really talk to my plants. My flatmate didn't believe me that talking to plants worked. And then we bought the same plant and we put them in our bedrooms and mine grew twice as long. And she was like,
ugh. Oh, right. So it does work.
Yeah, it really does. Probably not to the extent to sometimes how I do it, but it does work.
Do they give you good advice?
Sometimes they do.
Sometimes.
In my head, they do. I probably shouldn't be sharing that. But no, I find them a really good company. And I don't know, I am mostly vegan. And ever since I stopped eating meat, I'm convinced that I kind of have this ability to commune with nature. It's obviously all in my head, but it does make me feel better. And it started with me being like, gosh, animals have such strong personalities. And then it just took a whole new life. And I started to think that plants did too. And now I'm just like, I love them all. You know, like my the reason I'm in Vietnam is to see my partner, and he has a really big plant and he keeps showing it to me on FaceTime, and I'm just like, I can't wait to meet him. It's just like, what am I talking about? But I can't. He's a very beautiful plant.
They've got personalities then.
To me they do, and okay. You know, it's very nice to be around them.
So even if you're staying in hotels or something like that, you'll get some and put them in the room?
If it's for a week or two, no. But if it's, you know, a month or longer, I mean, if it is even short term, I wouldn't mind a little bit. But yeah, if it's like a month, I think you should have a friend.
Yeah. So not cut flowers then?
I don't mind cut flowers. I do like cut flowers, but I tend to go for plants more. I mean, so on occasion, I go through phases where I have, you know, loads of cut flowers, and I like it. So many things to do to keep them alive, and put a penny in and change the water often, and they really stay for a long time. So that's nice. But then they wilt. I do have some dried flowers because I couldn't let go of the flowers in my hand, and I dried them very nicely. And so they've moved between like four different places with me now. But it's just, yeah, then they go and you're kind of like, oh, I have to chuck them out. Whereas your plants just tend to be there, yeah, enjoying life.
How far back does that go then?
Doesn't go that far back. I think it goes kind of 3 years.
Right.
When I started collecting plants, and now I've got probably too many.
Do you have a garden?
You know what? In my new place, we do have a garden, but it's a lot of it is just a patio. And then it's got a bit of a flower bed, and it's got lots of things there. The only thing with planting in the garden is that I move all the time, and then I have to leave them behind.
Yeah.
I don't really want to do that.
Well, pots then. I'm going to give you a supply of pots. Yeah. With plenty of fresh pots. Compost.
Yeah.
You'll be able to grow everything.
Take them all with me. I mean, it's very bizarre.
I don't think it is, you know. I think that actually having a growing thing around you is really lovely. It gives you a sense of time, and it gives you a sense of patience.
It really does.
I've just been growing an unbelievable number of tomato plants this year.
We've got two, yeah.
The problem is I put all these seeds in. There we are, seeds. Mm. And quite often they don't really germinate, you know. So I put loads in and they all germinated. And then, like you, I felt a sort of personal connection to these plants. I couldn't let them go. And I can tell you, I'm going to have an absolute glut. I'm going to be sick of tomatoes.
There's a good salad, and it's just tomatoes and pine nuts, if you like them.
I do, yeah.
And then a splash of olive oil, a splash of pumpkin seed oil, and really good balsamic vinegar, you know, a really thick one. That's almost like a glaze. Incredible. Just incredible. I remember eating it and being like, what is happening? It was so good. And then I discovered early this year, pumpkin seed oil. Once you add that into the mix, there's no going back.
You discovered it like you discovered the wine.
Quite similarly, I was in Austria. It's true. I just go to other countries and I'm just like, this is amazing. And it was this like pumpkin seed oil that had been hand ground by someone. It was really thick and really deep green. And then I bought one that was not as good. Again, it was kind of runny and translucent. And then I found on Amazon, you can get a really big bottle of one that's made in Austria. And sure enough, it was really thick and nutty and it lasts for ages.
Well, I can see I'm going to go and get a good bottle of Austrian pumpkin seed oil.
Very thick, very green.
Lovely. Mm. So seeds work well for you, not only as something to plant, but also something to eat and something to make oil out of. I'm going to put them all in there.
Lots of seeds.
Into the time capsule. That's fantastic. So we're on to your third item.
Third item is an album that I only recently discovered, even that came out a while ago. And it is Heavy Is the Head by Stormzy, which I'm completely obsessed with.
What sort of music is it?
So it's like British rap. And so Stormzy, like I had heard some of his music for a while, kind of in the background. I'd never like sat down and listened to it. Anyway, when I was flying over here, I was like, I'm going to listen to this because it's Stormzy and he's a cultural icon. And I know a lot of his politics. He's given a lot of money to various things. He gave money to Oxford University to help fund black students through their studies. And he's been really incredibly politically active and headlined Glastonbury. And that was a whole thing. So I was like, okay, and what is wrong with me? I don't understand who this person is and what they're about. So I listened to it, and I listened to it twice when I was awake, and then I fell asleep for another like 7 hours, and it was just on repeat. And I woke up and I was like, this man is a genius. He completely encapsulates a generation and a moment. And I don't know if he feels really familiar because we both grew up in South London, and a lot of his cultural reference points, and I think that his experiences are very familiar to me, and he expresses a very fundamental thing about the Black British experience, but also like being Black in London, growing up in London, what it means. It's really hard to explain, but I honestly just think he is absolutely just someone who encapsulates so much of my experience and so much of my reference points growing up. and also is really vulnerable in his music and really open and truthful. And yeah, I just think he's a genius. I also just never thought I'd hear someone rap about things like therapy and their mom and their family and their mistakes in the way that he does, which is very fresh and honest. And I feel like, I don't know what his process is, but I imagine that when I'm listening to it, that there is a lot of him improvising on a theme and kind of coming up with the most raw and honest and fresh version of the experience that he's talking about, which in any artist is so admirable because being incredibly truthful and speaking from a place that's very close to not the version you present to the world, but the version you are in private or with the people closest to you, like your family, is such a gift when someone shares that. And I think one of the reasons that he is so popular, especially with my generation, is that he is like that.
Yeah.
And it's really admirable when someone, or it feels like they lay themselves open to be seen and to speak up on behalf of a lot of people. But also that in doing so, they're really just speaking about themselves is really, really lovely.
And that is brave, isn't it?
He's so brave. I just love him.
Because normally in that world of rap, actually, you know, how you come across has always been very important, particularly men. There's a macho element to it. So to show vulnerability.
I mean, I think there is. And I think there is a vulnerability in the world of rap. There is a lot of thing about masculinity and about the need to be brave and be strong. And I think what's really interesting about Stormzy is that his version of brave and strong is defined very strongly by him as also being vulnerable, being honest, and basically being in his feelings, which is incredibly attractive.
Well, he's a good-looking man, Stormzy, isn't he?
I mean, I'm so sorry to my boyfriend. He's literally in the apartment across the hall. But I do have a crush on Stormzy. I think he does too, though, so it's fine. but yeah, I would love to. I just think, like I said, it encapsulates a lot of things. And a lot of things about my life personally, really beautifully. And I do tend to get obsessed with one album for ages and ages, but generally if the obsession is there, it doesn't go away.
No.
Yeah, I just think it's very pertinent and very of the moment. And I would love to have it in my little capsule.
You're going to have it. You're going to have everything he's ever done. It's all there. I might even put Stormzy in for you.
I would love that. I don't want to take away from his great life and his reasons or clip his wings, but if he would like to come and keep me company.
Where are you from in South London then?
So I grew up in Clapham and I went to school in Streatham and then I went to school in New Cross.
I'm New Cross as well. Well, Bermondsey.
Oh, Bermondsey. Yeah. South London's so funny because I wanted to escape it. And as soon as I left, I wanted to go back. And then when I'm back, I want to leave. And then when I leave, I, you know, it's just like I have this kind of strange pull towards it. And it's so different from North London, I think. Mm. Just the whole way you exist in it, because it's not as well connected. And I think it can also feel very community-based, but it's also got this kind of edge to it. So there's just so much going on and it's very hustly-bustly. And a lot of my friends who are from North London are just like, I'm scared. I don't want to go to South London. And I'm like, but you're from Hackney. And they're like, I don't care. I don't want to go to South London. And I'm like, okay.
I've never thought about that before, but that lack of communication in the sense of that you have to get on a bus to go anywhere and you can't just jump on the tube. It's not as well connected, is it, South London? So, in fact, it does mean that the communities very much are individual, I think.
Very much so. If you have grown up there and you're from there, like, you know, you can understand the shifts and the changes. But I think if you're not from there, it can feel quite intense and strange. Or you can really enjoy that it's very community-based. But I think people have quite strong reactions to South London. And it's a funny place, I feel, to come from. I think it's... I feel such a different world view from people I know who grew up in North London, even though both grew up in London.
Well, the accent is different. The Orange Line has ruined all that. Everybody can get from north to south very easily.
And it's made Clapham really, really well connected somehow, without like, doing eight hops on the tube. It's funny as well, because Clapham... Or even just saying I'm from Clapham, I appear, say I'm from Clapham, people are like, oh, okay. And I'm like, no. Clapham in 1992. Different.
Yeah. Did you go to university or did you?
I went to university and to drama school.
Wow.
One after the other with no gap.
And what did you study?
So I studied French and Russian at university. And that was an experience. And I do not regret it, but I learned the hard way that Russian is a difficult language because I did it from scratch.
Good Lord.
So I got in, great, I'm really good at languages. And then I discovered that actually I was really good at French and that Russian was a different language. I had done no prior research. It was tough, but I'm glad I did it. Living in Russia again.
Was that a whole year?
Yes. It was 8 months. Mm. 8 long, cold months. But, you know, it was definitely challenging. The culture shock was enormous.
Yeah.
Bigger than I could ever have imagined. And we didn't speak a word of Russian because at that point we'd been studying Russian for a year.
Mm.
And then you get shipped off, land in Moscow, you drive for 7 hours to this place called Yaroslavl, which is a small city, 7 hour drive from Moscow. And I got dropped off in the corner of a road and met by these two Russian sisters who didn't speak a word of English and told, you know, good luck, we'll see you at university on Monday.
Oh my word.
What was going on? So they can we bundle off into this apartment and they ask me if I'm hungry. And I said, yes, I'm hungry. Thank you so much. And they made me spaghetti. I saw them making spaghetti. I thought, fantastic, I can have spaghetti. And then I saw them take the spaghetti out of the pan and then put it in a frying pan and then fry it. And then put loads of cheese on it and give it to him. I remember thinking, 8 months.
Eight months of this.
And that's going to be fine.
pass me the vodka quickly.
Yeah, basically. And but then, you know, it was a good time. I visited since. We haven't visited so much in recent years. But immediately afterwards, we did go back a few times and travel. Because once we got the hang of it and the swing of it, you know, we visited Moscow. Moscow, I take it or leave it, but St. Petersburg is wonderful,
Yeah. Amazing
and very beautiful. And I mean, it feels more familiar because it's kind of modeled on Venice. So it feels fairly European. Why did I do Russian? Yes, I did Russian and French. France is nice. France is really nice. I just sat outside and pretended to be cool, or what I thought was cool at the time.
Just smoking Jitan.
Yeah, basically. Just, you know, just...
So during that process of studying French and Russian, when did you think, do you know what, actually, I want to be an actress?
So I actually took a year out between my third and fourth year, and I thought, what do I want to do with my life? I don't want to be a consultant. It just doesn't sound fun.
No.
And I thought, okay, if I could do anything, if I could start again from scratch, what would I do? I thought acting. So I auditioned for a play that was going up to Edinburgh Fringe and got a part, and I played it really badly. I just want to admit that now. I was dreadful. But I did it. It's so funny because my mum and her partner at the time, they were like, they came to see it and I could just tell she was very supportive, but she was looking at me with kind of thick smile. But she said afterwards, Michael said, no, she's got something. I really am grateful that he saw something. Anyway, I then decided to just apply for lots of drama schools, and I applied for like 7 and I got into 2, and I felt very fortunate. So I ended up going to RADA.
Fantastic.
And doing the BA there.
I mean, RADA's an amazing place to go.
I went very raw. I didn't really know what acting was. And I was incredibly, I think, vulnerable as a young student. You know, I really went in open-hearted. I went in with no barriers. And I think the training really hit me hard and immediately. I remember 2 weeks in crying on the phone to the head of acting. I can't do this anymore. I should leave. You know, 2 weeks. Calm down. So dramatic. And her saying, you know, people get affected by the training and it usually happens 2 terms in. For you, it's 2 weeks. Mm. That's okay. It's
going. If you're going with such a sort of open view to the whole thing, because some people will go in and say, yeah, well, you know, I'll listen, but I'll take it with a pinch of salt. But if you go in and say, so that's what I do, is it? That's it. Okay, right. And then it doesn't work. You are going to feel affected by it. You are going to feel let down by it.
I was torn apart. I was in pieces. You know, everything was so intense and real. And every project, it was sort of like my life was ending as I kind of birthed this character out of myself. And then you realize it doesn't need to be that serious. Like you can just acquire the skills and then pick and mix, basically. Your process doesn't have to be like this huge ordeal.
And if they had any doubts, you've disproved them.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're going right back. I'm going to take Stormzy.
Yes.
And I'm going to put him inside the time capsule.
Amazing.
With a really good mic.
with a really good mic.
Yes.
But I have to also have that particular album.
Yeah.
Because I think it's amazing.
Yeah. Okay. Lovely. We've got two items left, Aurora.
We're going to take a short break for some adverts. We'll be back in a moment.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back. Okay, let's get back to Aurora and find out what else she'd like to put into her time capsule.
Basically, I want to take my bookshelf, but I recently got rid of about 800 books. But I don't want to take those 800. So I guess I just want to keep the remaining books.
Because you've not read them yet or because you love them?
Just because the ones I love. I think the ones I kept have got a huge amount of sentimental value.
Mm.
Yeah, like half of them from my degree.
Mm.
And things I like learned and I didn't expect to learn. And the Russian side, a lot of Solzhenitsyn, who was a Russian dissident.
Mm.
And wrote incredible things about his experience of being in the gulags, the work camps, and a huge testimony kind of documentary piece that also has his commentary called The Gulag Archipelago. And even though it's exhausting and I wouldn't necessarily want to read it again and again and again and again and again all the time, I do have a huge amount of affection for his writing. And on the French side, I want to take my Proust with me, and not because I necessarily love In Search of Lost Time, which is this crazy seven-tome rambling of his life, but because I really loved the way it was taught to me and have a huge amount of affection for the tutor, Dr. Jennifer Yee. He taught me that module and was also my kind of touchstone when I was there of people I could go to. So there's just a lot on that shelf. And also things I've read recently, Queenie by Candace Carty Williams, which I think it as a novel, like the Stormzy album, just expresses a lot of things very familiar to my experience and very familiar to me. Mm. And she won all the awards for it. So I'm so proud and happy for her because she deserved it. So there's just a lot on there that I think, I can't really be without those.
No. No, I understand that feeling, yeah.
And it's funny because I'm not super I actually don't like reading, which isn't a great trait for an actor. But really don't like it. But it's also really wonderful, isn't it, to just settle down with a story. And I prefer reading so much more than I prefer watching things. I don't really like watching anything, actually. Yeah. Which, again, is not great for an actor.
No, again. So that's languages and arts and everything. Is that the area that's always been your fascination?
I think it probably has, to be honest. I mean, I do very much like science, and there's definitely a science streak in my family. One of my sisters is a scientist and teaches at UCL.
Mm.
And my brother-in-law is a scientist / comedian. So I do love that way of thinking, and I'm very engaged with the news. And like I said, I'm really interested in learning about economics. But ultimately, do I just like stories? Yes, I think I do, because I think they're really important. And I think they're amazing ways that we can exercise our minds and our capacity for empathy and our imaginations and our ability to create and to become cohesive and to understand difference is all through stories. I think the thing that is really universal about humans is our emotions and our capacity to feel, with the, you know, exception of a small percentage of sociopaths and psychopaths and narcissists, which you've got to allow for. But also stories help us understand them too. So hey ho. But I really love that you can watch something, and just the moment when you watch someone living under completely different circumstances in a completely different place, who's so different from you, and then they feel something and you recognize the feeling that they're feeling and you think, oh gosh, no, I feel that too. And because of that, you're able to say, okay, I think I begin to understand you. And I've always really loved that. And I also just love random fantasy, because I really like how much fantasy can take you away from yourself, but back to yourself. I just really, really do like stories, and I have to just admit that. But yeah, I think it is just something when I was a child. I've always loved it. I actually really struggled to read. I really couldn't read for a really long time. It was so strange. I just couldn't get my head around it. And then once I got it, I just couldn't stop. And then I started to like it less.
This is hard work. Get someone to read to me.
Well, I do like audiobooks. I love audiobooks. I either have the radio on or an audiobook on. I don't really tend to have much silence around. And I love it. I love someone telling me this story, because I could be doing anything in my house, but also be in Shanghai.
Yeah.
With a detective, you know, listen to When We Were Orphans. That is. But
I love audiobooks, but only because I do a lot of them. So they earn me a living.
Now I'm going to go and look you up and listen to all the ones you've read.
Okay, then. I'll send you a copy of A Christmas Carol, which is my favourite.
Oh, no, please do. That's so lovely.
I'll send you a link. Okay, well, I'm going to put your bookcase, all your books. We're all going to go into the time capsule.
Yeah.
Well, our last item then, which is something you want to reject.
It's something that I've fallen out of favour with, which is a box set of Mad Men. Also, just doing this has made me understand. I already knew that I was a ridiculous person. I think my ridiculousness has been heightened by being alone for 2 weeks, but this is ridiculous. Everything I've said today is completely ridiculous. But that's okay.
It is okay. Everybody's ridiculous.
That's true. But I think some people hide it really well, whereas I'm trying to hide it and I already come across as this ridiculous. So it's like, what would happen if I let the lid off? But yeah, my box set of Mad Men, I've just fallen out of favour with it. I mean, I've watched it a lot. And I think I used to think of it as a really good example of like naturalistic acting. And I was actually talking about it with someone the other day, and I was like, yeah, you know that moment where they're like standing on the balcony and then like that sound happens, and they were like, no. And I said, okay, fair enough. It's probably because I've watched it 20 times, so I just know every single moment. But I loved it for a long time. I think it's difficult. When you watch something a lot, it becomes more transparent. I think also I've known for a long time that there were issues with the show and its representation of a lot of things. But I always was like, well, no, because, you know, but I'm understanding it. I'm understanding America. And I think now I did get to the point where I think, no, I'm done with it. I stopped watching it. And that's a huge thing for me, because I basically just had it on repeat for the last 10 years.
And the argument was that it was of its time. That's what it was like. And you go, yeah, but let's not romanticise it.
Exactly. And I think for a while, when I first watched it, you know, I was very young and I thought, oh, it's addressing things. And I think that continued for a while. And then I eventually was thinking, well, actually, no, it's not. It's just kind of including them, but it is romanticising it. And then I think the most recent time I was watching it, the reason I had to just go, no, I have to stop, was the incident with Joan when she gets her partnership for the firm and she has to sleep with this guy in order to get it. And I just was like, oh, I can't do this anymore, because it's like the way it's represented, you know, Don has a problem with it. And it's Peter who's making it happen. But I just thought, you know, actually, it's just so degrading. And it's a conversation I have a lot with my flatmate, because she's a civil servant. And I say, well, you know, actors do this job. The actor has to go through that experience. And also, as the viewer, you're always experiencing it as well. And I've watched this 20 times and gone from being okay with it to finding it excruciating. But I think I just, at this point, it was just, I think it was just dealt with such kind of a false wave of pretending that there was an understanding of what she was going through, and then it's never readdressed. And I just thought, oh, actually, she's a really complex and very flawed character, but I never feel that she gets the justice for the things she's gone through, you know. And it's not like there's no excuse of just because she's done bad things, she should have bad things done to her. I don't know. I think eventually I've come to the point where I'm like, it's exhausting, actually. And it is romanticising, like you say, the time rather than looking into it. What I do love about the show is the amount of research that went in, the amount of historical research, and the accuracy of that really comes across, I think, in the acting, the building of the characters. But going back, if I could rewrite the show, I would write some things differently.
Are you going to write? Or do you write?
I have started. Yes, I've started writing recently with a friend of mine. So we've written a comedy about a casting office.
Great.
Which we've actually, we're turning into a podcast. and we've had to put in a disclaimer that it's any likeness to real people or events is completely coincidental. So that we don't offend anyone.
No. And are these based on things that you've heard about casting? Or are they
It's experience? Completely based on our personal experiences of casting. Yeah.
Oh, my word.
So there's a lot of tea and gossip that comes out. But it's a lot of fun. And doing the podcast is helpful because it's actually made us cut down the show. And I think we're going to rewrite draft one into something else. It would be helpful to take some of the stuff outside of the office so that we can see what these people are like when they're in situations they're uncomfortable with, because they're usually the ones in the position of power.
Yes.
But yeah, so that's one thing we're writing, and we're trying to write a couple of feature films together as well. I got a lot of ideas about very random shows that I just need to start on, but writing takes time, and I'm trying to write a one-woman show, which I've been meaning to write for 2 years and I've never got down to. So
you've got plenty of time.
Yeah, exactly. I can't hurry through it, I don't think, anymore. We wrote Typecast, which is the casting comedy. We wrote very quickly in lockdown because we were feeling neurotic and stuck.
And then you'll be in charge of casting. You'll be the person with the power.
And people will hate me because they'll think that I'm trying, you know, I'll do that thing that I think people try and do where they try and be friendly and it comes across as a bit strange, and then it offers the actor and that I've been on the receiving end of, and I'm doing it, you know. I'm so sorry.
I once did a casting for something, and in the script that I'd been sent, it said that my character broke down and cried. So when we came to it, I did what was said. I stopped and I started to cry. And the casting director sat there and stared at me. And then eventually I thought, but it's their line next. They were reading in the other part. So eventually I stopped and I looked up and I said, sorry, I think it's your line. And she went, oh, my God. Oh, thank goodness for that. I thought you were having a breakdown. And she had a version of the script where it didn't say that I broke down and cried. Do you know what? You would think that if I was that convincing, I would have got the part, Aurora.
Listen, don't even get me started on that. This is awful. This is the thing. I think that I don't know if I really am cut out for this, because I just feel dreadful anytime anyone feels dreadful, and I just want to protect everyone and make sure that they feel like safe and seen and taken care of and loved and validated. And actors are just on the receiving end for one reason or another. Oh, it's just awful. It just makes me want to cry.
You can turn the tables, though, sometimes. I was once kept waiting by a director for ages and ages, and then I thought, OK, I'm going to show my power. And he said, so what have you been up to recently? And I said, I've been waiting to come in here.
Ooh.
And then he said, yeah, no, before that. I said, you know, it's so long ago, I can't remember.
Wow.
Of course, I didn't get the part, but I felt great.
It's funny, isn't it? I don't think, I mean, I've never in an audition actually had the courage to be that bold. And I do, sometimes when I'm actually working, I can be a little too bolshy. <You know? laughs> I have been known to have the odd intense moment with the people on set. So I have to tell myself, pick your moments. Don't take everything so personally. Just be like, I'm going to ignore that because you're having a bad day, rather than being like, just wanted to say, you can never speak to me like that ever.
I was just asking if you wanted a cup of tea.
Yeah, I want proper tea, not bad tea. I don't want those tea bags. Why don't you even listen to me? No, it's, I calmed down. I think the last 2 years has been a really good lesson in just calming down, having a nice time.
There we are then. Okay, so we're going to calm down. We're going to take a deep breath and we're going to place Mad Men and its annoying naturalism. Stop being so bloody natural. Goodness gracious, put that fag out. We're going to put that into the time capsule.
Yeah.
Well, there we are. It's done. We'll seal it up. I'll keep it safe for you. Anytime you'd like some really nice wine.
Oh, my gosh.
Or to plant some seeds.
Such a weird eccentric mix of things that have gone in, but that's fine.
It is absolutely lovely. It's really been great talking to you.
You too. You too.
I hope we get the chance to work together sometime. I'm sure it'll be a joy.
Me too.
Bless
you. And please do send a Christmas carol.
I will do. Have a lovely time in Vietnam.
Take care. Thank you so much.
You have been listening to My Time Capsule with me, Mike Fenton-Stevens, and my guest, Aurora Burkhart. If you've enjoyed this podcast, you can subscribe to it for all episodes on Acast, Castbox, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. Just search My Time Capsule. This has been a cast-off production produced by John Fenton-Stevens. The music is by Pass the Peas Music. Thanks for listening. Okay, I'm going to look up return train fares from Tunbridge Wells to Pézenas in the south of France. Oh, actually, thinking about it, I might just get a single. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.